registry empty. Go to Brazil. Without luggage, without trade.
Right.
Without any
cargo. No cargo. Right.
And get over.
Right. But you don't know why? I mean, who made the big decision?
No. It's a regular but such it's not one time.
Yeah, it's not unusual for the.
Yes, possible.
Okay, well, now going back to 1953, I think is where we were.
Yes, 1954, the jet, 1955.
Well, but you jumped ahead, though. There are some other things in here. For instance, in 1952, we begin the long series of work that you did on identifications of radio sources with...
I made that there. Oh,
with Novi,
that, oh, that's
Novi and Supernovi. The first one you
yes,
did
very
was...
very interesting page, but without the social sciences. I drew, I was the first to do attention in both the old Chinese record.
That's right.
And I drew attention to the old record, Biot, and many strange articles in the 19th century.
And well, you use this article by Lundmark also.
Lundmark, first of all, and besides the Lundmark, the original Biot, the... Humboldt, and I forgot
right.
The
were, did you work at all with any ancient historians in the Soviet Union, or was it all by yourself?
By the way, history, especially old history, is my hobby for a long time.
I see.
Yes, but it's interesting to remark, this work is no result, without result. I made a tape, for example, to identify Cass Avis. Even to 363.
Right, AD, right.
But before the level of astronomy, for example, I was the first to do attention to the possibility of supernova 10 or 6, Chinese defined. But the level of technical astronomy is not permitted this time.
The positions were not good enough.
It is too early. But you know that in past, that Stephenson, and other people
right.
developed this branch
right.
astro-history, if you want.
Yes. Yeah, it's been developed to... But your very first paper, though, was about Fornax A, and that one
yes,
was that
right.
one's correct. NGC 1316. But then there were many that had turned out to be wrong, of course.
By the way, it's very interesting. Fornax A is absolutely yes, I was the first. And... very interesting. This time, many problems connected with the Cas A, because if you know, and you know naturally, the body of Minkowski in his classical work
right.
made a doubt about the supernova nature of the Cas A.
Right.
I don't believe such conclusion.
You were convinced it had to be a...
Only supernova. And I make attempt to define with the... object of 369.
Right.
But the idea is right. Today we know that we have very strong, very puzzling problem. Why no?
Why no optical?
Historical,
right.
Indication about the
in the 17th century.
In the 17th century, time when Paris Observatoire worked very active in the
right.
Cassini time.
What is your idea?
The situation of the phenomenon is very favorable European observatory, you understand?
Right. What is your idea?
Recently I have an idea. Maybe it's black hole. Really. I can explain you if you want. Because it published in Nature several weeks ago. Maybe it's black hole, Cassie. Why? Simply speaking, if it's supernova, Type 1, for example, the continuum activity and produces the comparatively slow light car,
yes.
as today is practically all people believe, is caused by pulsar activity, the young pulsar inside the remnant by means of magnetic dipole radiation, maybe hard X-ray and
yes.
astronomy, support the emissivity and on it necessary to, if, for example, the, as some people believe, the old star that was exploded destroyed, is in such situations, the light car must be abruptly go low.
Yes,
understand?
Yes.
Adiabatic cooling and very fast.
Right.
Necessary to continuously supply energy. Only one way. We have two possibilities for such kind. The first possibility is that is Riemann hypothesis in which introduced 23 years ago by Bader, Christian, other, Bergbridge and other, is radioactivity hypothesis. That's one. It's
right.
Continuous supply. That's one. And second, I think the pulsar hypothesis. Mm-hmm. About the possibility of radioactive decay. Such hypothesis contradict the chemical composition of the remnant.
Yes.
Is observed by Vandenberg and other.
Right.
If the star is completely by radioactive, it's necessary fantastical high abundance of radioactive species. Don't observe. But no possibility to explain this even gas A by exploding all star in any direction. In this case, the most part of the matter of the theoretical condition must be transformed into iron. And as you know, in the optically observed remnants, there is no indication about iron.
Right.
In such situation, I introduce hypothesis, the reason for absence of observation of Cassie, it is collapse to black hole. Such situation, maybe optical image which accompanies the transformation into neutron star, is essentially more feasible.
Yeah.
But it's a very rough idea.
Yeah.
By the way, in this connection, maybe analyze two of them.
Okay. But going back to what year was it now? 1954, I believe. Why were you convinced that Cass A had to be a supernova remnant? Because
the velocities need to 10,000 kilometers per second.
They were high, but they were not indicating a nice pattern, though, at that time.
No.
It was sort of a jumbled picture.
Yes. But only one event, I understood, can produce so high velocity.
It must be a supernova.
And I, from my childhood, don't believe in miracles.
Miracles, right.
Always.
And
this is a real strategy.
Now, another thing, though, that you pointed out the importance of supernovae, but also novae. You were very interested in novae as a possibility.
Yes, because this time I'm interested in novae, but today this interest renewed. It's possible to renew it. New phase of such it. Renew it.
You renewed your interest, yes, right.
But in my time, it's too previous. I have it. Today, it's more or less bad luck. But you see, the fission is larger than 50%. I think maybe 80%.
It's not so bad at all, that's for sure. You have a very high theoretical or efficiency, shall we say. Now, in 53, in Astronomische Journal, you have what I think is a very important paper where you split the galactic radiation up into the two components that we've talked about already, but you also point out that there are two types of radio sources in the galaxy. There are the H2 regions, like Orion A.
Yes.
And then there are supernova remnants that are due to synchrotron.
Qualitatively, it's right up to now.
Right. And the supernova remnants are the sources of the cosmic rays. Of course, we're still not certain about that. But then you also now talk about the metagalactic component. This is the first time I've seen this word come in. What we now call the extragalactic radio sources.
This is a very strange word. In a mistake connected with my interpretation of the Cygnus A.
Can you tell me what you mean?
No. I was in a very strong impression from the Bader's Minkowski idea about the counter. This time, in connection with the gas A, I was against Bader's Minkowski.
Yes.
But I understand that it's at this very high level. The influence of idea Bader Minkowski was very strong. You know, the Bader Minkowski proposed the hypothesis of encounter.
Colliding galaxies, right?
Yeah, colliding galaxies. Right. And in frame of such hypothesis, I made attempt to explain the real situation in Cygnus A, separation two components. But it is without consideration, it's bad.
But nevertheless, though you said that you did not like the colliding galaxy idea, but you did say that the radio galaxies should be emitting via synchrotron radiation once again.
Yes, simultaneously.
And was that because of the spectrum primarily that you thought that? Or?
Yes, especially this is known this time. By the way, as a first who calculated the synchrotron energy of Sigmus A in Asgard, 10 to the 6, 10 to the 58 is my invitation.
10 to the 58 ergs?
Yeah, the total energy amount. With,
using equipartition arguments, but that's later though. And then at this stage also, you began talking about the integrated effect of all of the radio galaxies.
Yes.
In the metagalaxy, and you said that at 3 meters wavelength, you would get a brightness temperature of 150 kelvins.
It is from Bolton and Stanley's review.
Right, but now what I'm interested in is that you said, well, now if we take all of the radio sources and we do some assumptions, we find out that the calculated emission is greater than 150, and therefore it's the redshift that is causing this emission to be reduced.
Yes.
Now, you must have been thinking of these galaxies...
By the way, don't forget that the Hubble constant this time is completely different.
That's right. It was quite different. But what sort of distances were you thinking of these galaxies being at? Because we didn't really... We had Cygnus A's redshift.
I had Cygnus, but I employed the old Hubble constant.
Right. Hubble constant was 250 or something.
Yes, it is. Yes. Hubble constant was changed...
In 52, I believe.
Practically, but the time of delay, this or that. I blow the 500.
Oh, you had the 500. Oh, I see. Okay, that's a big difference then, yeah. But were you assuming that there was a redshift for Cygnus A at that time? Well, actually, this was 53, so you may not have known the redshift for Cygnus A. You may not even have known that.
After Bodice, the identification was published in Astrophysical Journal
1954. 54, right.
In January.
But it was measured much earlier, though. But was that the first time you learned about all of that, was when it was published?
Yes, yes.
For some reason, they took 3 years to publish all this.
I never forgotten when an academician, Bartzumian, came back from his visit to the United States, and he told me, you know, the redshift of the fantastic 16.
Cygnus A. I see. Did you correspond at all with Western scientists at this time? Were you, like Oort or... Others?
No. It's not the same.
Okay, then here is the crab paper in 53. We've already talked about that.
I do attention at other interesting work. This time, people made attempt to observe linear polarization of Crab Nebula in radio range,
right,
without success. I drew attention that it is explained by too low frequencies and by Faraday effect. And if the frequency will be higher, I emphasize,
right,
it's necessary to expect polarization in the particle the same as in object. It
and then
very quickly confirmed.
Mayer et al.
Before Mayer.
Right, you predicted this.
Yes.
Did you try to get some Soviet astronomers to do this one also?
Yes, I remember Vitkevich and other people also observed this with success also.
This was like, they were looking at 21 centimeters.
Yes.
It was the same story with the galactic background where, I think it was Razin tried to get the polarization.
Yes.
But it was too lower frequency. Now, in 1953, you wrote the first book on radio astronomy in the Soviet Union.
But it's a popular book.
It was a popular book.
But it's
right.
Popular, but it's very, I see the content is very very dense.
Right.
This book never edited, but only...
was never translated. Right.
Yes, only in socialist countries, in Romania, in China. I had a Chinese copy of this book.
Uh-huh.
And this time I began to write a famous book, The Cosmic Radio Waves.
Which came out in 57 or 56.
56, but I wrote in 55.
Right, you were working on it.
Work.
Was your idea to have this book as a textbook for students, or?
No. It is this original kind of book. Semi monograph is. Don't forget, it's no books.
The world right.
is absolutely empty place. It is semi monograph and semi. But textbook for specially educated men.
So, yes. You mean an advanced...
I am very proud that my book was translated into... what is the year when it's
translated? 60.
It is very interesting to know that the all agreement about translation achieved in the Moscow Astronomical Union meeting in
1958.
Yes.
You worked with the translators.
And the quality of translation was Warshawski, who would translate, you know, Russian quite mm-hmm. well. And in this time, in America, will be actually the new generation of astronomers, radio astronomers.
That's right.
And for these people, this book I think, maybe people told me.
Yes.
Drake and other, and Burke and other
right.
people, very useful. And I'm very glad that my book will be maybe a small contribution in development of radio astronomy in this part of the
industry. Oh, I think that's very true. I mean, I began graduate studies in 66, and it was a basic book at that time. It's even today it continues to be a useful book as far as I'm concerned. Now, as we get into the late 50s here, it seems that things are more settled in terms of understanding the nature of the radio mission. Would you say that's true?
Yes.
The field is sort of converging, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yes. But by the way, this time, my attention grew, my scientific interest shifted in another direction. I was very eager in the problem of planetary nebula. It's very interesting.
Oh, I see.
You know that planetary nebula is a classical object for astrophysics.
Right.
The force of Zanstra mechanism,
right.
Rassilon's theory, it's in the old textbook planetary. And the forbidden line.
Right.
What you want? And it's long. In fact, it's pretty this laboratory of classical astrophysics.
Aller and Menzel and all that
Menzel,
work.
Menzel, yeah. You know. But I was very astonished that no answer to the main question. What's the nature?
Where does it fit into stellar evolution,
what
you mean?
No. What is the place of planetary nebula between other objects? This time, I recognize maybe several tens, more or less wrong hypothesis connected with it. I understood the impact of this problem. Don't forget this time the development of the stellar evolution, presumably by work of Martin Schwarz and
sure,
other
right.
people, it's very important.
You're talking about mid-50s now, or late 50s?
Late
1956.
1956, yes. Mm-hmm. And I drew attention, my style is such. First of all, this is the most important part of the problem. It's the zero approximation necessary to omit the matter of the second problem. What's the main in the problem of planetary nebula? I very quickly understood the main is the unrestricted expansion of planetary nebula. No possibility for the matter to go back.
Right, it just goes away. Yeah.
And what's the consequences follow from this time? I very quickly established the method of determinant of distance to planetary nebula. It's very important because My method employed all the way today. Sometimes they said about my method, sometimes it's the evidence method. No, many people, what was in English, famous professor was very active in planetary nebula theory, forgotten.
Seton.
Seton, Odell.
Yes.
Etc. You understand the method?
Yes, I know I know the method, yes.
It is very simple. And I never forget when I made my first report about my work, new scale, new system of distance.
Yes.
People laugh because only one formula, extremely simple. But it's real formula. And after this, I recognize very important things. The planetary nebula produced from a red giant. It is very important. This is true.
Sure.
But during the next 10 years, nobody believed this. Only after work we performed at the end of 60s. This idea was today is confirmed by a fantastical large amount of observation. But I'm very interested in this work. I developed the theory of, for example, you have this time very restricted number of planetary nebulae in Magellanic Cloud, the best proof for estimation of relative scale of distance, you understand?
Right.
Because the distance to Magellanic Cloud is known. But for radio astronomy, it's very important because I developed the evolution theory of supernova remnant, you know, in 60.
Right.
Completely as a continuation.
Analogous of to the.
Analogous to planetary. Right. It is right.
I see.
For radio astronomy, it is important. And all method today, modern method, radio astronomical determination of
the surface brightness diameter relationship and so forth.
It's completely in the planetary nebula problem.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to ask you about. That was published in 1960.
Yes.
And on the basis of that, you predicted that Cas A should be declining.
It is, yes.
In its flux.
Yes. It is simultaneously. Today, naturally, part of the theory is changing because, for example, the rate of expansion and not the quick, but it is a matter of second and process. The main idea that the first time during the whole development, I drew attention that the necessary to expect variability in such object.
Right.
And why is variability? And the physical reason for such variability.
And of course, everybody had been using Cas A as a basic calibration.
Yes, this time. And simultaneously, I declare the method of obtaining the variability of Krapf, the ratio of Krapf to Cygnus A, naturally, because Cygnus A is a metagalactic object. The power must be constant.
And very strong also.
This method is incomparable by flux. It's also very important. It's a very interesting page.
Were there any appropriate data from Soviet observations where this could be checked, or did you?
Many people from working team in the comet in the symmetrical wave range. Stankiewicz, for example, and Troitsky. Some people employed really absolute method. For example, Mr. Troitsky,
yes.
Absolute measurement. I think it's not so well.
But,
because it's very difficult.
But that was starting.
Yes.
But of course, what they did at Cambridge was they looked back at the past records.
And when I came to the conclusion that Cas A must be variable, and what is the possibility of promises, I remember the people from Cambridge had old.
Records.
Records of the Cas. And I wrote a letter to Cambridge and asked about the necessity to repeat this letter. The same equipment.
Right.
And this very quickly will be.
And Shakeshaft, I think it was, that did it, right. Let me ask you about something else. I am very interested in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and I know that you are also, but when did your interest first begin in that field?
After the work of Phil Morrison.
Morrison and Cocconi? That article?
Very strong impression of me. This time, I can tell you a funny story. This time, in Soviet Union,
this was 58.
President, 59.
It was
59,
I'm sorry.
But I interested in this work next year, lead to 61. This time, and the president of Soviet Academy of Science, Mr. Keldysh, invite people which took part in Soviet space program to wrote books and articles devoted to holiday connected 5 years.
5 years after Sputnik?
After Sputnik.
Right, so this would be 62.
62.
Right.
But it's 61. I had understood the situation quite well in the sense that nobody from my colleagues will write such book, any book, because they're busy and they cannot write. Simply speaking. In such situation, I came to the necessity to around the book devoted to intelligent life in the universe. Very quickly I write such book, and exactly bring in edition book when the legacy of the edition book was empty because nobody write book.
The rest of it.
Because our people, naturally, as I predict, no writer.
Right.
In spite of the Kelvin's invitation.
Right.
And in such situation, my book very quickly was published. And when I come back to in Moscow from Canada, I must very quickly to prepare the fifth edition of this book.
The fifth
edition.
I see. Amazing. So,
Carl Sagan, famous book, Carl Sagan and my
right.
The history of this book is very funny. I met Carl Sagan forgotten. But he very interested in this book, and I asked him about the possibility to translate this book in English. Please,
right.
Give me this Russian manuscript, and I found the possibility for such a translation. I sent him my book, and waited 5 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years. He wrote me this very interesting book, and he employed it for student teaching. It's very interesting, yes. And after this, then, when I make an agreement with Sagan, I said him that please we can make any changes and addition it because
right.
For bring the book for American edition up to date.
Right.
Oh. But he, my permission, employed in very wide sense.
Yes.
Suppose my establishment where I look the American edition of my book 2 times.
He doubled the size.
Exactly.
And he became a co-author also.
That Sagan, my part, made aside with us.
Yes, the separate symbols for where he inserted his.
For example, I wrote according to true philosophy of dialectical materialism.
Right.
Because it's a philosophical book. And the sign, a triangle.
Right, right.
Sign into the but according to that, my position is very fine because I can all people's human soul. It's not my work.
Right. Now that's very interesting. That's the only book I've ever seen where you here's one author and here's the next one and here's
when I visited the United States, and naturally when usual situation in foreign visit Soviet people is very poor because financial restrictions, naturally. Yes, all people in America are astonished about my progress and said, oh, you're a very rich man. Your book is translated and published in soft cover.
Right, right. Yeah, you didn't. You never
zero.
Got. You never
exactly
got a kopeck out of it
exactly
all.
Zero.
Right. But when the first observations of any kind for SETI type efforts in the Soviet Union were not done until when?
I see the best. I very far from such business. I recommend you to make a conversation with Mr. Troitsky, and Mr. Kardashev here.
Right, but that was
the
late.
Good possibility for you. To meet them and all information
right.
About that.
That was late 60s, though, before they.
I don't know about the exploitation. I'm very pessimistic about this.
Well, you've changed in the last
I
couple of years.
If you can fully read my book in several places, I wrote, but it's very interesting possibility, it's very one universe. I think this is the most interesting possibility. Essentially, deeper than trivial supposition about the many. Super civilization now gives. You took part in the discussion devoted to
several days ago.
Several days
yes.
Ago. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. What is the Frank Drake is a very clever man. But his idea is fantastically bad, the coral like model. It is only quantitative propagation of intelligent life without qualitative change. But it's impossible.
Why?
For living man, there's no possibility to live in God. During many million years of the billion years of development of the life, the surviving environmental is quite natural. For real colonization, necessary to qualitative change the psychology, kind of life, absolutely. But in spite of the fantastically strong achievement of technology, the biological property of the man is practically without chance from Cro-Magnon time.
Right, but you don't think we can adapt quickly enough to living in spaceships?
I think that the evolution of the matter in our universe from unliving to living necessary to suppose next step from natural life to artificial life, from natural brain to artificial brain.
Right.
And it is quite possible. Principally speaking, in the frame of possibility. And when the artificial brain is really developed, this problem comes from the restricted lifetime for man, which is restricted the duration of the...
I agree, but isn't that the same problem if you send out robots colonize the galaxy?
Absolutely, but let us suppose high-level robots.
Yes.
With our brain.
Exactly.
Yes. And let us suppose the ensemble of such robot, super brain, I don't know exactly, I cannot suppose,
right.
But such possibility is real. Only by such means is possible to colonize. And Frank Drake considered condition of good life.
But in a basic sense, there's really not much difference whether it's robots that colonize or whether it's organisms that colonize. I mean,
by the way, in my book, I am the first who drew attention as a fantastically peculiarity of our planet, the level of radiation caused by TV.
Right. Well, you know my article on that. But I gave you credit. I mean, did you...
I know, no possibility. Let us suppose our civilization far away from our is possible to astronomical property of our planet, for example.
Right.
But
I gave you credit in my article. I know that you were the first one to really point that out. If you were on Mars, what would you see on Earth?
Naturally, I was in a hurry this time. And I made very rough calculations about the integral power of TV stations there. It is far from reality. This estimation is overestimation or underestimation?
I can't answer quickly because you did not consider considerations of bandwidth and so forth. It was too simplified.
Naturally.
Because you have to really look at bandwidth considerations. I think that's you can't just add up all the transmitted power.
My question is other.
Oh.
I suppose that the total power, the real existing TV stations.
I see.
According to 10 to the 4, for example, all over, and maybe the power, I forgot, in the server of
Watt. I would have to check that. I'll check that.
And what is it today, real situation?
Yeah. I'd have to check. I can't remember the number now.
You forgot it?
I can't remember the number, but I think I have my briefcase, actually. Well, let me just ask a final question.
Please find it.
Right.
My possibility is 1,000.
Right. Well, I'm amazed
you have
lasted so long. I really appreciate this. If you look pre-1960 at the development of radio astronomy in the Soviet Union, it's rather different than it is in the West. The theoretical side was very strong. The observational side was rather weak.
No.
You don't think so? How would you characterize it?
I think it's not so. By the way, we have in Soviet Union very strong theoretical experimental achievement beside the theoretical. For example, let us suppose the situation Dr. Kardashev presents about the recombination line.
Right.
Yes. You know that the first discovery of recombination line was performed in Soviet Union.
Right.
Maybe you don't know that the long-based interferometry, the method, long-based, it's a very important method, proposed by Kardashev, Sholomitsky, and Matvienko, three Soviet men.
When was it?
1962.
Mm-hmm.
I repeat, Kardashev,
yeah.
He's here,
yeah.
Matvienko, several weeks, just moment he visited the United States, Madrid, and
yes.
And Sholomitsky, he's Moscow. They absolutely, really give the idea, not only idea, but the technical side, the slide, record, what is the time.
Using the atomic clocks.
Yes, all in detail.
Right.
And published in Soviet, because it's purely technical problem, in Soviet Radiophysical Journal. But because the comparatively low level of radio engineering is connected with the time recording production, for our, it is without our possibilities. This time, 1962, this situation essentially improved. Yes. And I told you, this time, the Soviet Union visited San Bernard Level.
A certain level, yes.
From
Germany. Right.
And I explained him the proposal, Soviet young radio astronomer about the longest principal new method in radio astronomy.
Now you say you visited Jodrell Bank?
No.
No. Who did? Kardashev?
No. Lovell visited the Soviet Union.
Oh, Lovell visited the Soviet Union. I'm sorry.
I forgot
the
name.
Yeah.
He's a very high official.
He visited several times. He was involved in the space program.
Yeah,
and all that.
And I made a conversation. I proposed him, my aim to make a common work with English radio astronomers.
Yes.
Very interesting reaction of Lovell. He very quickly understood the physical meaning. But he rejected his project. Why? Why, you know, he said, that there is so small angular dimension sources.
There are no small.
All sources is extended in radio astronomy.
Right.
Real star is absent. It's 1 year before we discover a quark.
Yeah. That's a good
and
story.
I conclude that it is naturally the theoretical part of what is in front, in best developed. But don't forget very interesting experimental and methodic achievements of Soviet astronomy.
I know many of these,
yes,
but I think you still have to agree that the theoretical is much stronger than the experimental. I'm just wondering why it developed that way.
I can give you as a very interesting. My best student, this member of the Council, Mr. Kardashev.
Yes.
In the last 10 years, he was brilliant theoretician, Kardashev. Absolutely understood. My best student. But all time, he devoted to the space interferometer. And several weeks ago, as you know from newspaper, the Soviet space radio telescope,
right,
and walking
between the ground and the space baseline.
So
right.
First of all,
I showed you the
performance the program. What is the reason why he delayed his meeting? Performance the program of interferometer of the mission 2 or 3 pulsar. I don't know the result, but it's principally
yes.
New state.
Right.
It's also experimental work. For Kardashev's characteristics, it's a very new
right.
approach
but,
to that solution.
But what I'm saying
but
is that
I generally agree with you.
Oh, okay.
Generally agree. But don't forget we have
right.
besides the theoretical achievements also experimental achievements.
But do you have any thoughts as to why there was no laboratory sort of like radio physics in Sydney or Cambridge, you know, where radio astronomy really observationally
yes,
was...
Yes, for example, you can see Dr. Parisky, he's a member of the Soviet Academy of Science, he elected also past my student. He elected the last autumn in the Soviet Academy.
Yes.
He's comparatively young. He's a boy of my professor during my postgraduate.
Right, right.
Yes. He's chief. The giant team of radio astronomers.
Well, that's today. No, I'm talking about before 1960, though, if we can go back to that era.
In Lebedev Institute, this time was very strong division of experimental radio astronomers, but by very strong activity of Mr. Vitkevich. Mr. Vitkevich simultaneously with Hughes developed the method to observe the crab nebula,
occultation,
solar corona,
right.
This is Vitkevich.
That's right.
Yes, and he's all, but practically all attention Mr. Vitkevich devoted to solar physics problem.
Yes.
It's also, but it's Lebedev Institute, and it's a very strong team. They had a very, this time, quite good radio telescope in South Bulgaria, Crimea, I told
yes,
you.
Right.
And today they had a very large station near to Moscow. No. I'm not satisfied with the general level of experimentalization and development of organism, but don't forget that some achievement we have.
Oh, I agree. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. That ends the interview with Shklovsky at IAU in Montreal on 18 August 1979, and this is also the end of the tape.